Good morning. This is Brad Lacey, pastor of First Baptist Church at Conshohocken, president of the Philadelphia Bible Society, and for this hour, host of The Great Message on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. I am joined for the fullness of the hour by Mr. Matthias Pertula, a dear and old friend to this broadcast. Matthias is now with the America First Policy Institute, and it is my pleasure to bring Matthias back onto the broadcast. Matthias, you are most welcome. Thanks for coming again.
Oh, I love it. Every time we connect, Brad, thank you for having me. So good to be here.
We love having you. And Matthias, you're doing some excellent work these days, and you're invested in, if you will, fields of personal, not simply interest, but of personal conviction. And maybe you could just give us a quick overview before we begin to fine-tune.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess I'm one of the fortunate people in this world that get to go to work and do what they love and what they're passionate about. So I think I hope most people are in the same boat, but I'm certainly one of those. At America First Policy Institute, I get to direct the Center for American Values. So our chair, Pastor Paula Y. Kane, she kind of leads the charge here. And the institute itself has been around for about 2 years, just over 2 years. Many former cabinet secretaries and former White House officials work with us and help craft some of the great policy that we're putting forward for the American people. And particularly in my center, what we focus on are pro-life issues and religious freedom issues. And we've got some other signature projects that are also housed under our center, the Project for Biblical Foundations, which is a very exciting project. I look forward to talking about that a little bit more further in the program. But so we're focusing on religious freedom, particularly that's mine. One of my policy analysts, she gets to lead the front on the pro-life work, but certainly involves me as well. All very hot button issues, not just in the policy realm, but also in the cultural realm. You know, this is where a lot of the conflict is happening with varied opinions. But you know, I think we're making some good progress and making some great arguments as to why our policies are the best and they should be the best.
So. I'm intrigued on two fronts. One, I'm going to speak with sweet affection. You get to hobnob with some political luminaries, and even better, they get to hobnob with you, right?
From time to time, I'm humble.
But more soberly, much more soberly, my impression is, and I'm sure it's not an exhaustive yes, but in the main, I would imagine that the people with whom you were working, whether they are overtly devout Christians, as you and I are, they are certainly men and women who are grounded in the Judeo-Christian ethic and in the priorities of a Judeo-Christian civilization.
Certainly. I think that I'd say some of the founding principles just come straight from the founders, right? How they crafted the Constitution, yes, and how they put forth the First Amendment and so many other freedoms that we take for granted that really have their foundations in biblical, you know, mandates. So I think that's what we espouse, and we want to keep pushing those forward and secure those rights and freedoms for generations to come. So
yes, you know, Matthias, what always concerns me is whatever the inadequacies or pitfalls or foibles of Judeo-Christian civilization, it is, by my estimate, the finest civilization known to man. In large measure, even exhaustive measure on its good days, because of the goodness of the Almighty. And we have certainly shed abroad bounty and overflow in a way that other civilizations, with every respect to them, don't. I mean, it is always a Christian civilization reaching out with a helping hand, for instance, in times of crisis. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So when Judeo-Christian civilization comes under assault, what alternative are the assaulters providing? I mean, the presumption that you can actually do something better always staggers me. Clearly, you are part and parcel of a movement that understands the difference and all the more the value of Judeo-Christian civilization.
Yeah, I think that speaks to kind of the truth of the scriptures, right, from the Judeo-Christian tradition. Then I always like to say that no matter if you believe or not, if you put into practice the principles that are in the Bible, you know, love your neighbor, you know, the good Samaritan, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, all of these things, life's going to look pretty good for you, I think. And I think that that's not just only on the personal level, but the way we kind of conduct business abroad. I think that's a huge, huge, huge testament to just the validity and the truth of what the Bible espouses, you know?
Yes, indeed. I mean, both President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill both espoused very overtly and directly that they were endeavoring to defend Christian civilization against the barbarians and the like. And neither one of them were per se, as we would, you and I would identify ourselves as born-again, spirit-filled believers. Neither one of them would have done that, but they understood what they stood for and what they were representing, to be sure. I might also add that when you're dealing with some of the figures of the left, none of them, if you raise Jesus Christ with them, none of them want to go against Jesus, do they?
Well, depends, I guess, sometimes, but...
Well, maybe there's the... But, I mean, usually they try to identify something Jesus said as favorable to their position,
certainly,
you know?
Certainly, I mean, you know, as in something probably like, do unto others as you would have to have them do unto you, you know? So, you know, those kinds of things. But, yeah, certainly, even they... The folks on the left that disagree with us so much, you know, they can attest to a lot of the things that Jesus says and what the Bible says.
They would certainly deny and fight against his sovereignty.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they can deny the ethical precepts of Christ.
Certainly.
Yeah. Now, Matthias, you part of your portfolio, as you shared a moment ago, and you're working in concert with a colleague, but part of your portfolio is our issues of pro-life. Tell us what's going on right now.
So, I mean, this obviously has been something that has grabbed the country pretty significantly since Roe v. Wade fell with the Dobbs decision, you know, moving the debate back to the states. You know, there's been a lot of discussion around whether the federal government, what's the role of the federal government in this debate now, where's the states, you know, but most of the states are, you know, if they're involved in it. Obviously, they're passing their own laws now, some with, you know, complete total bans and some that are just putting it right up to the, you know, to the express lane as much as they can. So, you know, across the country, this is what we're seeing, you know, where and then some states are going into varying degrees, you know, they're partial bans, not total bans. So it's been, you know, just from a policy perspective, it's been very interesting to watch how states and the public is reacting to it. You know, obviously, America First Policy Institute, we are pro-life. We want to be as many babies saved as we can. And that's our agenda. But not only saving babies, that's obviously what we want to do, but also supporting mothers, creating systems and ways that we know that families are supported, single mothers are supported, and coming up with creative ways that, you know, that women and expecting mothers, and especially those who find themselves in a pregnancy that they weren't expecting to be in, that they know that they're supported beyond just, you know, that we want to save the baby, but they need to understand that there's programs, infrastructure around supporting that life and that mother and the family and also the father. You know, that's been a big part of the discussion that's been left out for years. The decision's just been always with the mother, but what about the father? What about their rights and their responsibilities? People love to tout, of course, you know, the responsibilities of the father to the pregnant mother, of course, but there's also a segment of fathers who don't get a choice either way, you know, and they want a choice. They want to be a father. They want that child. They want to be that individual in their lives and, you know, support the mother and all that. And they want a voice in the discussion. So there's, you know, so much here to uncover and so much to do in the coming years, you know, as we move the life forward.
You know, when we're dealing with wider social issues and social policy, everyone wants a seat at the table now. Everyone, I mean, even individuals who are representing things that you and I can't embrace. So from my vantage point, why don't we also allow the most vulnerable of our citizenry, the unborn, let's let them have a seat at the table as well. you know? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It always staggers me. I mean, one of the things that made us great, we welcomed the helpless from everyone else, everywhere else on the planet. I visited the Statue of Liberty back in the summer, and I mean, we welcomed everyone's helpless, but we are willing to sacrifice the most vulnerable amongst ourselves. It's staggering.
Yeah, and I'd say that the left loves to tout, you know, the choice factor in this whole thing all the time, but that's the only thing that they tout. You know, it's got to be the choice, the choice, the choice, but they don't actually, and then they, some segments within the left, they go so extreme as to just wanting to have a full in full access to abortion throughout the entire pregnancy, and you're talking about late-term abortions. To me, like, you know, they, the left loves to say that, you know, pro-lifers are the extreme. I would wholeheartedly disagree with that. You're telling me that we're extreme versus, you know, how you want to push partial birth abortions and so, you know, late term abortions. It's absolutely staggering to me. The extremes, let's look at what extreme actually is here. So
to be sure, Matthias, we must pick up on the other end of the broadcast. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute. We return in a moment. Thank you. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute returning for another round of The Great Message on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Matthias, in speaking of the fact that those of us on the pro-life front will be labeled extremists, it strikes me, the irony it does, you have the powers of the left that are in control of just about every prevailing instrument of influence there is, from government to education to media and so forth, and yet you and I are the extremists. It's it's so ironic, it's even pathetic, you know. I think most people can see through that, certainly the majority, I trust. Mm-hmm. That being said, an area where, and now my beautiful wife, now deceased with the Lord, she actually served on the front lines of the pro-life movement. I wish you could have met her. In fact, when I write my memoirs, there'll be a whole chapter, My Wife the Jailbird, because she paid the price about five times for being on those front lines of the pro-life movement. And I always honored her for her concern for the unborn. She always honored me. I have had a deep concern for any number of years for the plight of our persecuted brethren. And at the core of this concern is the issue of religious liberty, and I know this is a field of great conviction for you as well. So tell us where you are in this endeavor and where America First Policy Institute is.
Yeah, certainly. So,
And by the way, forgive me, we'll focus on the global issues up front. We'll follow up with domestic.
Sure. So I guess from the policy perspective right now, one of the key areas that we're focusing on from the global front, we're producing some materials right now on China. That's obviously one of the leading persecutors in the world, consistently a country of particular concern that's labeled by the State Department. You know, that's not an honorary title by any means for the CCP. For what they're doing, but it's really sinister when you really begin to research these countries and how they're carrying out their domestic policy to suppress religious freedom. It's absolutely staggering. I mean, the length at which the Chinese government, or I want to say the Communist Party of China, will go to suppress, it's insane. I mean, we see the Uyghur situation. Essentially, what the CCP calls re-education camps, they're concentration camps. That's what they are. There's reports of, you know, rape, all kinds of horrendous things, death, of course, and forced labor of Uyghurs, a lot of which, you know, has direct ties to our international trade markets, the products that we produce, from cotton to some agricultural products, even energy products. There's likely that there's ties to forced labor that comes back to the Xinjiang region in China, where the Uyghurs are essentially forced into forced labor. We have some products coming out, hopefully in the next couple of weeks where we will be highlighting these issues a lot more and really drawing in the faith aspect of it all, the religious freedom aspect, and just how sinister the Communist Party is. I mean, it's no different from the Soviet Union. They're absolutely hell-bent through their sin cessation policy to just completely eradicate religion and faith. They're trying to rewrite the Bible, you know, trying to make it all Marxist and make it all conform towards their own worldly ideological beliefs. They will have no God above them except themselves.
It might simply be naivete on my part and a kind of emotional response in the immediate. So please correct me if I'm wrong. But my impression is that the Communist Chinese or the Chai Coms are even more insidious on this front than were the Soviets.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's partly also the fact that they're utilizing technology so well through AI and facial recognition, keeping track of all these. I mean, they've got loads of prisoners of conscience in their prisons right now because of brave people who stood up against these policies that they're trying to implement. Sinicization, again, that's the driving factor here. Conform all ideologies into the Communist Party platform.
Are you conversant with the story of the Heavenly Man, Brother Yun?
I don't believe so, no.
I will see that you get a copy of the book. This came out a number of years ago. This man was just, what the authorities did to this man defies description. But the truth of the matter is, he was, I won't go into all that. That's another story for a whole broadcast, frankly. But in one instance, he was getting out of China. He really was a wanted man, but somehow he was able to get under false guise to the airport. And when he approached the checkpoint area, you know, to go through the screening, he says that the Spirit of God told him, spirit to spirit, do not speak. Wow. Do not use your voice. Say nothing. So Brother Yun honored the voice of God. It had been instrumental to his welfare many times prior.
Wow.
And so he said nothing as he passed through the checkpoint, boarded the aircraft. The plane ascended into airspace, crossed over into more international airspace, at which point a conversation arose between Brother Yun and a gentleman next to him who was a Norwegian businessman. Mm-hmm. And the businessman said this to him. Do you recall that system back at the security apparatus? Brother Yun said, yes, I went through it. He says, well, I invented it. It's voice sensitive. Anyone who would even cough, the vocal pattern would be picked up by the system. If Brother Yun had said good morning to the checkpoint officer, he was done.
Wow.
God protected him.
Yeah. Yeah.
From that.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. What about the Christian church? Tell us how, I mean, the church is blossoming and exploding, and yet it's coming under intense attack.
Yeah, you know, even kind of citing back to my days with International Christian Concern, I remember a phrase that came very clearly from the Chinese church. They essentially said that church thrives under persecution. It just grows. It just continues to grow. And it's hard to get official numbers just how expansive it is. But those who are involved in the house church movement there have consistently said that it's growing. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just thriving. People are hungry for the Lord. There's videos of Bibles being shipped in into the country, real Bibles, not the ones that the Communist Party is trying to rewrite. And just the hunger for the Word of God is incredible. Like they will tear open the packages and just crack open the Bibles. And it should be kind of a wake up call to the church in the West, just once again reminding of just how precious this freedom is that we have. That we have the Bible. We've got the freedom to read it. But then, you know, there's a lot of concerning trends around the West when you start hearing the Bible is hate speech. And there's all this kind of like we've seen in Finland that draws a whole lot of concern on my end about when do our governments begin to start to try to censor these. And if people will say, oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen. I would just caution people to be so naive in that fact. So
yeah. I would heartily concur. In fact, this is an interesting reality. In my role as president of the Philadelphia Bible Society, we're a small niche ministry. We work in complement at times with the American Bible Society, which is the granddaddy. I was at one of their conferences, and I learned this from the ABS, based in Philly, by the way. I think it's still true, but the Bible is considered to be one of the 10 most, and I quote, dangerous books in print and in the world, according to the American Library Association. Mm-hmm. It's on the very foundation of Western civilization is deemed to be one of the most dangerous pieces of printed material there is. It's utterly staggering. Right. But Matthias, what is also staggering is that we need to take a break. The time flies. It flies. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute. We will return in a moment. Thank you. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute, returning for another round of The Great Message on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Matthias, as we make a segue between religious liberty globally and religious liberty domestically, a question for you. I'm sure that this one strikes a nerve amongst you and your colleagues. When you are so acutely aware of the insidious nature of the communist power in China, what is it? How do you guys feel? I mean, how do you respond to the fact that so much of the prevailing power here in the West is in financial partnership, if you will, on the receiving end of monies, big monies from the Chinese government or Chinese interests, governmental interests?
Well, it's obviously very concerning. And I mean, even going into the kind of the previous topic where, you know, their policy needs to be, it needs to have teeth for it to actually work, right? So one of the things that in order for the United States to lead in this space, they've got to tie any relationship, multilateral, bilateral relationship with China to some sort of an economic outcome, meaning like if the Chinese do not improve, that needs to be tied to some sort of an economic output that the U.S. is putting out, you know, because that's the lifeline, right? So they need to feel it where in their pocketbooks where it hurts. But when we see, you know, things what China's doing domestically and some of that, you know, folks just, you know, ignoring it in many ways or celebrating it even in some cases, it's very, very concerning. Like we can't. I think that there's a level of ignorance probably within the public just how bad the Chinese Communist Party is. And not just that, but how bad the policies are in themselves or the very spirited nature of the policies. So that needs to be exposed. People need to understand just what is the end result if we keep going down this road. We're going to be on the line with the Chinese Communist Party or the North Korean Communist Party or whatever. So.
Yeah, you know, I've been reading a wonderful book on the young men who lent their support to Churchill on the eve of the Second World War. And one thing I learned, in the main, the book isn't giving me anything new other than some magnificent detail. But one thing that I hadn't really been fully privy to, throughout most of the 1930s, the British public were left bereft of any understanding or awareness of the threat that was they were facing. The British government, especially under Chamberlain, was very, very consciously insidious in silencing dissent. So the British populace knew nothing until Czechoslovakia was taken over, and suddenly they realized we're on the brink of war. My fear is that with the way things are being handled in the media today and a collusion between government and media, it's going to be close to too late before we fully understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would say, and I would elicit your response, there's no question that religious liberty, as grounded in the First Amendment, is the bedrock of American democracy. Yeah. If we are not supportive of the rights of people abroad, then we're nothing but a shill or a shell of what we once were.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the first freedom, right? It's the very first thing that the founders put into the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, number one. That freedom in itself was why the Puritans themselves came across the sea for the first begin with. And from that freedom, you get the basic, in my view, you get the Western society, you get the American way in many ways of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. All of that is tied in that, because they all knew what it meant to not have that freedom. That meant that your freedom of thought, your freedom of expression and all that were to be monitored, and they were to be suppressed unless they fell in line with the prevailing whatever government mandate was. So in some ways, it's kind of comical to watch the left, try to suppress these freedoms when it's the very thing that actually gave them the right to do so to begin with, gave them created the culture, created the climate that we get to enjoy here with the open expression that we have. So, yeah. But then when you hear them wanting to shut down, any kind of opposition, it's pretty comical, but it's also very sad at the same time. So.
Yes, it is. And, we spoke earlier utilizing the motif of the table. Mm-hmm. You and I would love for the unborn to have a place at the table, just as every other voice wants. I would put it this way as well, that if we are lending ourselves due to financial interests to powers that are denying religious people a place at the table, that is not only counterproductive, but it is self-destructive. Mm. America, I mean, we also subscribed to a great degree to what we've called civil religion. And I've heard some religious commentators decry that. But I would actually suggest it was a positive for this reason alone. The prevailing powers, the civic leaders throughout our society gave the gospel a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. They may not have been born-again believers. They could have been corrupt as sin. But they gave religious leadership a seat at the table. In essence, they gave Jesus a seat at the table. So now, as a nation that has been on the blessed end of that, the fruitful end of that, we are in cohorts for financial gain with powers that would not only deny God's people a seat at the table, but would actually endeavor to destroy them. It is a frightening reality.
It is, absolutely. That's why it matters that folks are involved in the public discourse of these things, and not just pretend like things are going to be okay. People have to be active. And I always try to stress this with folks, that you got to be informed, you got to be educated, and you got to participate. Like, that's absolutely important, because, there's active elements that want to restrict your freedoms. They want to bring those down. They want to tell you how to think and feel and what to say, and we just don't believe in that. That's not the First Amendment. That's not the American way. You form your own opinions, you form your own ideas, and you're free to do those. Go ahead.
Matthias, as a Christian, what is your perception? My perception is, and I would love for you to tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah.
My perception is that the overwhelming preponderance of the Christian church here in the United States is woefully unaware of what we're discussing.
Absolutely. I, as a Christian and someone who's active in the church, whether it's by, fault of their own or just by the mere fact that life is busy and it's just ignorance in that sense. It's just people are asleep. They don't understand just how prevailing these forces are that would tear down the freedoms that we've been talking about during this whole segment. You got to wake up. You got to participate. You got to be educated. You got to understand what's at stake here. Just to quote Reagan, there's a famous quote that he said that freedom is only a generation away from extinction, or something to that effect. And I think that's so true. I mean, you see that with every single generation that we got to fight for it. You got to make sure it's secured all the time, and not just abroad, but first at home. That's your civic duty. And most of the, and it's infuriating sometimes when you come across folks who say, "Oh, I don't vote. I don't participate. That's not my thing," or whatever. Well, that is your risk, and especially if they're Christians. And to me, that is all, you're doing a disservice to the gifts that you've been given just by the virtue of being a citizen of this country. You are the government. You are, this is a, we're based on self-governance. That's the whole point of voting. Like, you elect folks, you elect your representatives. This is you. And if you are willfully just not wanting to participate, I don't know what I can say to that, but there are people around this world who would, they're absolutely dumbfounded by this. How are you not participating in these discussions, or, you know, being active at the voting booth or something? Because it's we don't have that right. You do.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you quoted Reagan. You can quote Ronald Reagan anytime you like with me.
Yes, sir.
Reagan or John Paul II, they were giants, and we need men like that all over again, don't we? But from my vantage point, there was a, I don't mean this, this gentleman is a luminary of the Christian Church. I won't mention his name. I'm not looking to deride him. I think he meant well by his premise, but I simply disagree with it. He felt that at this point in the church's history, we needed to step back rather than to engage. I don't see how that's possible.
No.
That to me is in direct violation to our calling as Christians. Our Christianity is public. There may be a private dimension, but it's public. Mr. Matthias, I can see you have a thought, but we have to hold to the other end of the break. It's not my fault, okay? Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute. We will return with Matthias's response in just a moment. Thank you so much. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute, returning for one final round of The Great Message on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. Matthias, we're addressing concerns, of course, at play and at large throughout the Western world and amongst the Western Church. But there are also forces coming against the Church here in the United States, let alone throughout the broader Western world. Share some things with us, please, that we need to know.
In terms of the threats coming towards the Western,
Specific cases. So if you
one
will.
Of the things I'd complement, a couple cases come to mind immediately. One that we've discussed before, not a domestic case, but the issue of Päivi Räsänen in Finland, the Finnish member of parliament. Yeah. We've discussed her case before, but to me, you know, the West is the West, and that's how we kind of view the going ons of, you know, our political realm in the West. But that to me has been, and to many others, one of the most concerning situations. You know, you have the general prosecutor of Finland bringing criminal charges against the sitting member of parliament and former cabinet, you know, secretary in the government of Finland for posting Bible verses that the church that she attends, which happens to be the official church of Finland, continues to teach or hold to that teaching. Very, very concerning there. She just had a follow-up court case last month or the month in August of this year. I believe that's still being deliberated. I'm in contact with her and try to get some updates from her. But that is a very, very concerning situation. I think she's going to land on the right side of the issue there. But that's something to be watchful for. And I think, you know, kind of pivoting to the U.S., you know, we see a lot of these. There's some encouraging things, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer all the time when we're talking about this, but I do want to say that the decisions that came out of the Supreme Court in June were huge things, and we put out a couple of expert insights on those recently. People want to read them more, but just kind of what the outlying pieces of those decisions mean. You know, we got a lot of religious exemptions expanded through the Goff case, and the 303 creative was a huge piece, not just for religious liberty, but for the freedom of speech. You know, Lori Smith, you know, she's a digital designer in, I believe it was Colorado, Colorado had a statute there that would force her to essentially have to create, she wanted to enter the wedding industry. She wasn't in it, but based on this mandate, if she did, she would be forced to essentially produce art or messages that went against her religious convictions. But based on the decision out of the SCOTUS decision, she has been now protected. And that has ramifications throughout the country. So I want to say that there's a lot of good things coming out of as well, but the challenges continue to mount as well. So,
well, if I may, you spoke of the figure in Finland. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, she won about a year ago, and they're still coming after her.
They're still coming after her. So the general prosecutor appealed the lower court's decision, and now it's moved up in the systems. And she just, like I mentioned, she had that second part of the second trial, I suppose, just in August, and that's still a waiting decision, as far as I'm aware. But
yes, and I mentioned her because is that not also playing out here in the West again in Colorado with the gentleman who's a baker?
Certainly, yeah.
He wins every time, and they keep relentlessly coming at him.
And I think that speaks to just the spirit of the left wanting to do this. Like there is a consistent. It's not even that. It's like the secularist pressure or the secularist spirit to suppress anything that goes against what they believe, and that's why to me, like it's as I'm, you know, observing and participating and writing and researching these. It's the leftist positioning here is religious in nature in itself. This is the ultimate thing that they believe, and if there's anything that runs contrary to this, it's bigotry, it's hatred, it's some sort of other form of suppression and discrimination, which is absolutely ridiculous. They love to tout themselves as the most tolerant, the most loving and respectful. However, as long as you go again, as soon as you disagree with them and your worldview goes against what they espouse, you're wrong. You're somehow wrong. And yes, Now you're a hater and a bigot and so on and so forth. To put it in plain terms.
And there is no mercy, there is no forgiveness, there is no difference of opinion that can be addressed over coffee or a conference.
No.
They're right, you're wrong, and God have mercy on your soul. Let me ask you what you think. Look, during the pandemic, and I have rather pronounced opinions of my own on that, I have to be very careful in my role. I'm here as a minister of the gospel, so I want to be very careful that I don't equate the gospel with a political platform or the like. But these issues do bleed into one another. Mm. So during the pandemic, we were rather fortunate in Pennsylvania, as distinct from New York, New Jersey, California, and Michigan, where things got pretty rancid. The governor of our state never shut down the churches. He did place carefully, or endeavored to. I don't think he had the authority, but he endeavored to place carefully prescribed dictums all around us. But he didn't actually shut us down. Mm. Whether he would have done that, would I have reacted differently? I would hope not. But I simply know that when all of this erupted, we determined within our own ranks that there had to be at least one church in my little town open for someone who might need the gospel through that ordeal. So we never closed our doors, not even for 2 weeks. I don't say that boastfully.
Right.
I simply said that in that we were called to be faithful. And God, I believe, honored us for that. Now, again, there was no executive of the state coming at us. I would hope I wouldn't have changed my tune. But I think lots of churches just ceded to the government mandate, and a mandate was never legislatively enacted. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately unconstitutional. So in your role, what was your perception of how our churches responded? Did we respond appropriately? Did we respond destructively? Was it a mixed bag? What do you think?
Well, I'm all for less government regulation myself. So, that's, to me, it was concerning to watch some of the states that clearly overreached. I mean, you're talking, well, you can just look at California. And I know that specifically because my father is a pastor there. They were forced to shut down. But then, you know, liquor stores and others are open, right?
Strip clubs as well.
Yeah, it's crazy to say. Like, think about that. Like, how do you shut down churches? And the governor there went as far as they wanted to restrict singing in churches. Like, you can't sing in churches.
I recall.
It was laughable. And it's but... But liquor stores and strip clubs, they can stay open. That's okay.
Matthias, let me ask you, and I can give you about 20 seconds for an answer. Do you think we've learned the lesson if this happens next time? Did the church learn her lesson, or is there another lesson to be learned?
I don't think they learned their lesson. No.
I don't think so either.
You got to stand up. This is ridiculous. Like, it's time to... common sense, in other words. It's time to – people got to start waking up. This isn't going to stop. This kind of onslaught is not going to stop. So time to wake up, people.
Amen. Amen and amen. Matthias, the churches need to stand up, and you need to come back. We'll make that arrangement offline. Brad Lacey and Matthias Pertula of the America First Policy Institute. God bless you, Matthias, and you and I bid our audience a good day and every blessing of God. Thanks so much.